Daily Wrap with Michael Kastner. More illuminating, less agitating.
The Daily Wrap continues. Michael Kastner with you. The Wall Street Journal has broken the story that Google and other advertising companies have been bypassing the privacy settings of people using Apple's web browser on their iPhones and computers. Joining us right now is Julia Angwin, Senior Technology Editor for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for being with us.
Happy to be here.
Congratulations on this story. This was all over the morning news shows, and it's still going on. Specifically, what is Google and the other companies doing?
So what happened is a Stanford researcher, Jonathan Mayer, found some code showing that Google and a few other ad companies have been using a very sophisticated trick to place cookies, which are little tracking devices, on the computers of people who are using, or the iPhones, people using Apple's web browser Safari.
Now, by the way, cookies are codes. They don't actually leave crumbs or anything.
No,
it's just a code.
You can't eat them.
No.
They're just like they're not fattening, so you can have lots of them.
You don't want them, but you can have them.
Safari is the only major web browser that by default blocks most tracking through cookies. And so Google was in a situation, and some of these other companies, where they wanted to post some cookies on people who had the Safari browsers. So they used this interesting trick where they embedded some invisible code in the ads that they delivered to web pages. And in that ad, you, the user, would look at the ad. You might not actually look at the ad. You certainly didn't click on it or anything. But the ad actually created an invisible form and filled out the form. Well, not, they didn't put anything in it, but it kind of acted as if it was filling out a form on your behalf and submitted it back to Google.
Mm-hmm.
That made the Safari, the web browser, think that you, the user, who hadn't looked at that ad, was actually interacting with the ad. And in that case, it would relax its privacy controls and say, okay, it's okay for this entity to track this user because they've interacted with the ad. They must have wanted it.
Now, who's to blame with this? Is this Google and the other advertising campaigns or companies, or is Apple to blame?
Well, the thing is that there are always ways to exploit loopholes in technology, and you see that all the time. And so I think the question is, look, you could definitely raise the question of whether Apple should have fixed this loophole earlier, but at the same time, they were trying to provide a functionality so that in case somebody was really filling out a form, they would be able to, you know, provide service to that user. So the question is there, I think the responsibility falls then on Google to ask them what about this made them think it was okay to disregard the privacy preferences of the person using that browser. Because
and what does Google have to say about that?
So Google says that it was inadvertent. The resulting tracking that happened after this form was inadvertent.
Of course it was.
But they defend the use of the form as a use of a known Safari functionality. I think that exploiting a loophole is probably a more accurate description of that.
Yeah. We're talking with Julia Angwin, who's a senior technology editor for The Wall Street Journal. She broke the story that Google and other advertising companies have been bypassing the privacy settings of millions of people who use Apple's web browser on their iPhones and also on their computers. I mean, let's face it. This wasn't inadvertent. This is dishonest. And I'm kind of curious what Google has to say to its users, because we use our iPhones, but we also use Google's products. That's just not being honest. It's kind of like your kid looking, you know, with the face covered in chocolate saying, I didn't eat the chocolate cake. Yes, you did. It was inadvertent. No, it wasn't. Julia Angwin, Senior Technology Editor for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Have you done your taxes yet? Just finished mine, to be quite honest with you. But there are some things, if you're not done with them yet, you got to make sure you avoid tax scams. There are 12 biggies out there that you want to avoid like the plague. And to tell us about some of them, we'll have the full list up at dailywrapwsj.com. To tell us about some of them, Robert Wood, he's a lawyer with Wood LLP in San Francisco, and he's the author of more than 30 books on taxes, so he knows his stuff. Robert, thanks for being with us. Let's get to identity theft. That's obviously something that's pretty scary, and it is so prevalent in our world right now. How does that tie into to tax scams?
Well, the IRS is doing, I think, a really good job of trying to publicize this. Their website is pretty good. They've got lots of useful information. They're trying to warn people. Certainly things like identity theft and phishing, I think, are connected. Those are two issues they address separately. But if you get emails from the IRS, don't respond. The IRS doesn't deal with emails, so they're not soliciting your information that way. And there are some, there are various other things they note on the IRS website that I think are worth checking just to make sure you're not providing your information erroneously and having it used to file a tax return or get a refund.
Let's be very, very clear about something. The IRS will ask you in 2012 to fax them things. Fax.
Yep.
They use fax machines. So they're not real big emailers or technology users. Although I will say they let you electronically file and they will do direct deposit if you're getting money coming back. But yeah, they're not going to be emailing you and asking stuff. That's just not how they roll.
Yeah, that's right. And you're right. That may seem anomalous that we have e-filing, which, I mean, the IRS has rolled that out in a huge way. It's very good for the IRS. It's been hard, frankly, for me and I think many other tax professionals to adapt to it, but you know, it's very clear that that's worked pretty well. But they won't, as you say, Michael, they will not be emailing you asking you for your Social Security number.
We're talking with Rob Wood. He is a lawyer with Wood LLP in San Francisco. He's author of more than 30 books on taxes. And we're talking about the 12 scams to avoid like the plague. And one of the things that people use a lot, and this is on the list, abuse of charitable organizations and deductions. Explain.
Yeah, well, first of all, charitable, I mean, the charity is, you know, it's a big, big industry, I guess you could say, in this country. It's important. I mean, charities do lots of good works. There are, of course, legitimate tax-exempt organizations. The vast majority are legitimate. But the IRS does find out about ones that are scams. It's hard, basically, if you're donating any significant sum of money or assets to someone, you should check them out. There's an easy way to do that, either through a tax professional or yourself. There's an IRS list. It's online now on their website. You can check out the organization. But if you start getting funny promises like, oh, don't worry, you know, even though your car is worth $5,000, we're going to value it at $25,000, run the other direction or drive the other direction. There are scams like that. I think common sense is important. There are ones that will value assets and will promise they will give you the item back or sell you the item back. Again, be very careful because a lot of that sort of stuff just isn't real.
Yeah, and how about if you're going to give something to charity, just do it for charity and not necessarily be worrying so much about the tax deduction. I mean, it's just a thought. I thought I'd throw that out there. Rob?
Yeah, innovative. I mean, Michael, innovative thought. Yeah,
living on the edge here.
Yeah.
Rob Wood, lawyer with Wood LLP in San Francisco and author of more than 30 books on taxes. We've got a link to the list of 12 tax scams to avoid like the plague up at our website, dailywrapwsj.com. Rob, thanks for being with us.
And Michael, congratulations for getting your taxes done.
Always early. You know what? The IRS gets your money back right away. I'm loving that. It's time now for your news wrap. Here's the Wall Street Journal's Paul Von Zech.
And Michael, a Moroccan man was taken into custody today in Washington for allegedly planning a suicide attack on the U.S. Capitol building. Amini El Khalifi reportedly talked to undercover officers about targeting synagogues and military installations. He was taken into custody earlier today and charged with unlawfully attempting to use a weapon of mass destruction against U.S. property. A bond hearing will be held next week. Authorities in Britain are looking for the origin of the counterfeit cancer-fighting drug Avastin. UK medical regulators believe the fake drugs may be coming from Egypt. The discovery of the counterfeit drugs sent a scare through cancer doctors and patients worldwide. New Jersey Governor Chris Christie has vetoed a bill legalizing same-sex marriage. The governor says an issue of this magnitude should be given up to voters to decide. The veto had been widely expected. America is about to see a kinder, gentler IRS. The much-maligned agency is tired of being the unpopular one, so it's plunking down $15 million on an ad campaign to put it in a better light with taxpayers. The Journal's Christina Peterson says the agency feels it needs to connect with people so that they'll pay attention to what it's trying to communicate.
Whenever there are new tax law changes, particularly ones that come kind of suddenly, they want help getting information out to people. So this is not exactly Super Bowl commercials, but it is stuff that people need help understanding because it's complicated.
And finally, Michael, a restaurant that lives up to its billing. A man who scarfed down a burger and fries at the Heart Attack Grill in Las Vegas over the weekend actually suffered a heart attack in mid-chew. Witnesses said the man was wolfing down one of the grill's triple bypass burgers with a side of flatliner fries when his symptoms started. The waitress, who was identified as Nurse Bridget, came to his aid. The customer survived, and he's recovering in the hospital.
Hi, I'm Nurse Bridget.
I bet you are.
It's got to be some burger.
Oh man, is it now? So what comes with the burger? Do you know?
Well, yeah, the triple bypass is huge. It's 1.5 pounds of meat, and if you want bacon, you get 18 slices for an extra charge. The burger alone costs $11.
What's the difference between that and the speedball that Belushi took? I mean, anyone? Anyone? All
this
right.
Works much slower.
Well, that's probably more fun too. All right, thank you, Paul. As the Daily Wrap continues. What we're going to talk about next actually could lead you to wanting one of those huge hamburgers. We're going to be talking about pot. President Obama swore up and down when he was campaigning that he was going to back off states' rights, states that decided to allow medical marijuana. But we're going to be talking with an editor from Rolling Stone magazine, Tim Dickinson. He's written a piece called Obama's War on Pot. That's in the new issue of Rolling Stone. We'll hear what he has to say coming up straight away. The Daily Wrap from the Wall Street Journal. I'm Michael Kastner.